With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we're bringing you two interviews about Gareth Tunley's new film, The Ghoul. First up, we've got Jack Gutman, the producer of the film. It's a really special moment to speak to Jack, because Jack actually works as front of house staff at Curzon Wimbledon, and somehow, in between serving out popcorn, he managed to produce this amazing film. So we sat down and spoke to him about how it just got off the ground and everything that went into his role, including late nights sleeping in a caravan in central London. Along with Jack, we also spoke to Alice Lowe, who you may know from her directorial debut Prevenge from earlier this year, as well as her work in Sightseers and Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Alice stars in The Ghoul, and we spoke to her alongside Gareth Tunley, the director. And there's some really interesting chat there about this new renaissance in low-budget British filmmaking that directors like Steve and Alice, along with Steve Aram and Ben Wheatley, are championing. Ben actually executive produced The Ghoul. So we'll start with Jack talking about The Ghoul. Just so you know, Gareth and Alice, we spoke to just in a little bar, so there is a bit of background noise there, but we have managed to lift out the voices. So pleased to welcome Jack Gutman, producer of The Ghoul, but more importantly, Curzon Wimbledon staff member.
Yes, hello. Hi, thanks for having me. Sorry, I'm professional.
So
let's turn that off.
That would never happen on set, I hope.
No way.
So this has got to be a pretty weird week for you with the release of The Ghoul.
Yeah, it's amazing and kind of totally surreal, because I'm still working at the cinema and The Ghoul poster is up at the cinema. I'm going on to the point of sale and I can see how I'm able to sell tickets for The Ghoul, and it's
how easy it is to just give them a discount ticket if they're buying specifically for The Ghoul, just like get them in.
Yeah, definitely. Just I could just sell Ghoul tickets if I wanted, just send them that way. But it's amazing, and it is quite surreal. It's very exciting. It's opening tomorrow, and seeing the write up on the website and things like that, it's really,
it's like it's happening.
Yeah, it just feels like a real movie.
Yeah.
I'm so used to all these real movies that I work with, sort of being, working in a cinema, and they come in, the posters come in, and they go on sale, and it's happening. But it's happening with our film.
Yeah, it's really exciting to come and talk to you as well. The fact, because I worked in like box office and front of house and stuff, so it's really great to see, because we have the Hinterland from a couple of years back as well.
Worked
in Soho, kind of taking that. It's great to see kind of people getting into film from the real end point of it.
It's great. Yeah, and I met Harry a couple of times early days of The Ghoul, and we'd shot it, but we were in the process of editing, and it was just good to talk to another sort of similar filmmaker who had done this project, somehow managed to shoot a movie and then get it on in cinemas. And so it was good to meet Harry. That was another film that we kind of saw, and it makes you think, well, maybe ours could also do that.
So. And so after this, we've got an interview with Alice Lowe, who's in The Ghoul. And I really want to ask you about, where did your involvement with the film come from? When did you become a part of it?
So I did, I did a couple of shorts with Gareth before doing The Ghoul, and I had been working on films. That's what I was doing before I started working at Curzon, which was great, and I learnt a lot and worked on some really cool films with some cool directors and things like that. But I kind of saw that if you work on films, you're pretty much full time. You know, that's like you're 12 hours on set. You've got to get to set. You're working 6 day weeks. And as good as it was, I always wanted to do my own projects or get involved with writers and directors whose scripts I liked and wanted to work on with them to get them made. So I kind of stopped working on films and started working at the cinema, which freed up my time to link up with directors and work on shorts and different projects. And I worked on a few different ones. And then through doing a couple of projects with a director, I got introduced to Gareth, who had The Baron, which was a short ready to go, and he asked me if I wanted to produce that, and I did, and that's kind of how we linked up.
And in the film industry, the like titles can be pretty fluid. So a producer could be someone who is pretty hands-on and making things happen. Yeah. It could just be someone that's given up some dosh.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, what was your responsibility?
Producer, runner, chef, driver, security, like everything. On this, it was everything. There's one point where we were shooting in Soho on a Saturday morning. We thought it would be nice and quiet Saturday morning, but we had these street cleaners outside, so I'm outside trying to ask them to be quiet while we're on camera. We didn't have any walkie-talkies, we're doing it via phones, just everything. One night I had to I had a camper van at the time, which was the production vehicle, which was great, so we'd, you know, pack it up after each day. One evening I had to sleep, we went to the next location which we were shooting in, so we couldn't unload into it because the next day we were on camera in the morning. And so that night I slept on that drive in the van with all the kit, you know, just did everything, and it was great.
How long was the shoot?
We did a crazy shoot of, our principal photography was 10 days. I think something like nearly 10 pages a day, which is just kind of ridiculous. And then excuse me, after that we went and got what we called our second unit, which took a bit more time, but we had some time to get that. So that's all the kind of when you see the film, the London shots and the sort of the exteriors, which kind of help the film breathe a bit, because most of the dialogue is inside,
okay,
in locations that we could get, but then we went out and got lots of footage, and there's stuff on motorways and, you know, around London and things like that, which we had a bit more time to get.
Yeah. And also, we're talking about this and what it looks like and where you shot it, but what is it about?
What's
it
about?
We haven't actually covered that.
No, yeah, it is. It's a psychological thriller. It's about Chris, who's a detective, who thinks these psychotherapists are involved in a double murder. So to investigate, he goes deep undercover as a patient, as a psychiatric patient. Then over the course of him having the therapy, his own psychosis and paranoia start to get a real grip of him, and the lines between what's really happening and what's going on in his mind start to blur. It's a bit of a head scratcher. It gets ugly, and I'm not giving anything away.
No.
There, yeah.
No. So how did you balance that with having to then dish out popcorn?
I wasn't dishing out popcorn at the time. My parents went away for 3 months. So in that time, that was like, okay, we've got a window to use this house as, and it turned into everything. So I moved back into my parents' house, didn't have a job at the time. So I was actually signing on when we were doing all this. And we had this 3 month window where the house became production office, unit base, became a few of the locations. So we just used this house we had. You know, if anyone's trying to do a very low budget thing, you need a base. And we got our base, that window came up. And so we just moved in there. And that's, so I wasn't working at the time.
Right.
I think there was a day when we were actually shooting and I was like, I've got to go and sign on.
And so I know from my time working at box office, you mentioned it earlier, getting a post delivery is always like a nice kind of once a week little surprise. Were you there for that delivery?
Yeah, I was, and it was great. Yeah, you get the cardboard tube, you take the lid off, and you do it with all of them, and you look at the new posters for all the films, and they're nice, like you say, it's a nice moment. You take see what you know what.
Did you know it was happening? Did you know it was going to get a text like it might be out today?
I didn't know on the day, so it was. I knew it would happen, but it came by surprise, and I wasn't even thinking about it. And then opened it, and it was like, oh wow, yeah. Great.
There's my name just
in the little block at the bottom, you can find it.
That's great. So other than seeing that poster, was there any other moments during either the filming or since you've wrapped that you've had to think, God, this actually happened?
Constantly.
Yeah,
almost daily. When I'm telling people what's happening, you know, when I say, oh yeah, it's got, you know, a week at Curzon Bloomsbury, a week here, we're doing a Q&A at Wimbledon.
Reece Shearsmith
doing our Q&A, and I kind of hear myself saying it slightly out of body.
Yeah.
That, you know, that sounds like the sort of conversation I'd hear film producers have, and it's sort of coming out of my mouth, and it's quite surreal talking about it. But these things are happening, and things like, you know, we've got a US release. It's mad. It's, you know, and I'm saying that and hearing myself saying that, going, is that our film that we've made?
That's amazing. Like when I worked in the cinema, there was always like kind of memories of like different customers or reviews that they gave you on the way out the door that were really like memorable or particular experiences of people or things that were said. I was wondering if there's anything that you can think of.
I don't know. I'm just thinking about people coming out of the ghoul and overhearing what they're saying.
Have you been in there with an audience?
No, I've been in there with audiences, but not in the kind of, I haven't been behind the counter hearing people sort of walk out and say, what is going on there?
That's really,
so I'm quite looking forward to that.
That's completely unique. Like, no one else is going to have that.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the time, you like say your producer's going to be out there after a Q&A and kind of lingering in the lobby and have to say hello and shake hands and say well done. And then maybe they'll get out the front door and then they're like, God, what was that?
Yeah, I know.
They'll have no idea.
I'll be there cleaning up the popcorn. But I'm looking forward to that. It'll be great. But I hope people are going to walk out with nice things to say.
And it is a popcorn film, do you think?
Not really.
No?
No, so I think the staff won't be too disappointed. You know,
not a lot to clean up.
No, it's not going to be. I don't think it'll be a big clean up job, which the staff will be happy about. But yeah, it's going to be there in the cinemas, which is, like I say, it's all quite surreal, but a great, great surreal thing to be sort of experiencing at the moment.
Well done, mate. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers.
So that was Jack Goodman. And now let's talk to one of the stars of the film, Alice Lowe, and director Gareth Tunley.
Hi. So congratulations on the film.
Thank you very much.
How does it feel to have your debut feature film finally released?
It feels excellent.
Excellent.
It feels amazing because we made this film on a very tiny, 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 tiny fag and a fiver budget quite a while ago. About 3 years ago we shot it, and it's took a long, long time to do the post-production, and then even when it was finished, a long, long time to kind of get it out into the world via festivals. So to get this release now is feels good.
Excellent. Well, I first heard of the film in LFF 2016, so
London Film Festival 1879. Yes.
what were those months like in between then and now, that kind of waiting?
So that was fine. It was more the months when we'd finished the film and it didn't have any kind of home, didn't have a festival, which I'm sure a lot of filmmakers go through.
Sure.
Where we were kind of fighting to get it seen and get it known. But we had a great, we got two execs on this film, Ben Wheatley, obviously, who was instrumental in getting it out there, and then Dheeraj Mahe was the other exec, who had the amazing insight. He sat us down and he said, you need to show your film to people. And we were like, whoa, slow down with the whole kind of industry jargon, okay? But eventually we got the idea and we just started showing the film about every month, 6 weeks, and eventually sort of it started to gather word of mouth and gather momentum.
Excellent. And Alice, I imagine you've been in loads of films that have been at festivals and you've had to wait X amount of months to finally see them come out. Is that a weird kind of state to be in?
It is, but at the same time, it's good because otherwise you'd just be working all the time if you're having to promote them back to back. I'm really pleased that it's sort of having the life that it has. I think something like this film, which is quite unusual, it's quite hard to pigeonhole what genre it is. That might be one of the reasons it took a little bit longer for it to gain some kind of like faith behind it, that it was going to work for a cinema audience. And I think that was just a bit of a work in progress that took a while galvanising some sort of momentum. And so you're just really pleased when that happens, because I think it would be a shame for this not to be seen in the cinema, because it is a piece of cinema, you know. You sort of think about films that you like from the 70s or whatever that are cult films that didn't get recognition at the time, and I just think, you know, it's nice to know that this film's getting some recognition and people are seeing.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Great. So, Gareth, if you could quickly talk about, you know, how this all came together for you then, from beginning to here we are now.
Well, I was in a position where I was, you know, writing scripts like a lot of people and sending them out like a lot of people and getting no interest like a lot of people, and, you know, just going through the whole kind of process of trying to get some stuff made, but really sort of maybe trying to second guess the market a bit too much, even though I wasn't trying to, but just unconsciously maybe sort of thinking, you know, what might get made? And it just became really clear that no one was going to give me £1 million to make a movie, and the only way to make a film was to just go and start trying to do it. And so I got together with Jack Gutman, the producer, and Tom Meaton, who produced and is in the film, and we started to just piece together a way of doing this film.
Great. And Alice, how did you come aboard the film?
So there's two different stories to this, because I think that I harassed Gareth to be in it, and he sort of in a very gentlemanly way says, oh no, I wanted Alice to be in it, so I offered it to her. But I sort of knew that Gareth was making a film. We're all part of a sort of friendship group of comedians anyway, and we've all sort of worked on each other's projects, and I heard that Gareth was making a film, and I was like, oh, I'd, you know, love to be involved, I'd love to read it. And then I read it and I was like, wow, this is amazing script. Didn't know Gareth had got this in his head, you know. And very sort of well written, tightly written, sort of got funny elements to it, like there's an irony and sense of humour to it, but it's a very straight kind of thriller, you know, and it, all the pieces really worked in a very mechanically brilliant way, I thought. And so I was kind of like, just wanted to be involved, basically. And and then coming on board, you know, it was just a lot of friendly faces, a lot of people that I'd worked with before, like Tom Meaton, and that just meant it was a project very much built on trust. It was really fun to go in and work on. There was sort of a real certainty of focus and kind of getting it done.
Yeah, you mentioned then this is kind of like a sort of, you know, big team effort with like a lot of people you already knew. I mean, this is kind of a time in the British cinema where these kind of the people, you two and Ben and people like that, are making films at the moment? Do you kind of see it, even though you're involved in it, do you see it as a special time for British film?
I think there's something happening. I think it's like, I think there's a reaction I think there's all kinds of things, different things happening in British film, as there always are in these things. There's lots of dynamics going at the same time, but one of the dynamics is a kind of grassroots moment where a few people, and I don't think it's entirely by chance, decided to just make films off their own backs. So, you know, Ben Wheatley was very much the kind of trailblazer, and, you know, Steve Oram, Alice Lowe, who sat here, myself, and others as well, but who just thought, we've got to just kind of take the, you know, seize the means of production do this ourselves, basically.
I think there's something interesting happening in Britain where in America it's all sort of like, oh, it's all about TV and film's dead, you know, film's not a moneymaker unless you're making Marvel sequels or something. And I think here there's a bit more of a sense of like the creativity in TV or in comedy perhaps is shutting down slightly.
Okay.
And I think as us as a group of comedians, we're all quite alternative, to use that expression. And it was I think it's about sort of those performers and those types of creators being a bit homeless in sense of like, where do you put your ideas, you know? Even though that's what British, you know, that we've got a real strong tradition of surrealism or horror or, you know, or quirky maverick kind of ideas, there's not that many places for that basically. And for me, like, to go into film, it was like this liberating thing of like, okay, maybe there's not much money, but at least there's no censorship, and there's no sort of like having to meet the demands of an increasingly paranoid channel or commissioner or whatever.
It's very hard to do anything kind of wild on TV. I mean, it does happen, obviously, you know, but I think, you know, hopefully this film has a kind of wild edge to it, even though it's quite a classical kind of film in some ways. It's got a kind of wilder edge to it. I think Prevenge definitely does. I think Steve Oram's R definitely does. And then films like Mercedes Grower's Breaks is very punk in its kind of just its attitude.
Yeah.
And you're almost forced to think like that when you've got no money, and you just have to sort of reinvent the way to make your own film. You almost can't conform too much because you just haven't got the money to mimic the whatever's happening in the mainstream. So,
and what have you got to lose? Why sort of try and compete with a Marvel film? Yeah. You're never gonna basically. So you might as well just go out on a limb and do whatever you want and hope that there's an appetite for new kind of stuff, like with the audience. So I think there is something happening, but it's probably to do with the sort of climate of where creativity is sort of seated at the moment in Britain in terms of like.
And it kind of flows it takes the path of least resistance, and it turns out that the path of least resistance is making low budget films.
Great. So some people have used the word Lynchian, I've read, to describe the film. I mean, when you see that, you kind of cringe a bit and think, oh, don't compare me to this person, or are you kind of happy that it's getting that kind of reputation?
Well, if you're going to be compared to someone, you know, it can't get much better than that.
Yeah.
I mean, with any film, I think, well, at least for us anyway, we were trying to sort of almost escape our influences as much as follow them. So whenever something was discussed, it was more saying, oh God, that's a bit too much like, you know, whether it's Lynch or anybody else. And so it was kind of moving away from those things. But it's definitely there because, you know, I grew up with David Lynch. I didn't grow up with David Lynch, but with his films.
You lived in his garden.
All right, the secret's out. I grew up with David Lynch. It's kind of in the DNA of things, really.
Yeah. Okay. And Alice, you've had your debut recently as well, Prevenge. Has that changed your approach as an actor? since directing? Like, when you're being directed by someone, do you kind of think, oh, I don't know if I do it? Or do you kind of have to separate that part of your brain?
I think I have to separate it out, because no one would ever hire me again if I said yes to that. They'd be like, oh my God, she's going to turn up and be a nightmare. Yeah. I think it's more the other way around. I think acting always informed me of how I was thinking I would want to direct, which is why I had to direct in the end, because it was just screaming to get out of me, basically, that I was like, I have opinions on the way that things are done, and I know which way I think works. And I mean, it's horses for courses, really. This film was filmed a completely different way to Prevenge, for example. Prevenge was a lot looser and a lot more sort of queasy, in that we had lots of moving shots and stuff, and this was much more static and much more controlled. And I think that Gareth's much more he's much more Hitchcockian in his way of Hitchcocky of being, of like knowing how he wants to shoot something, and it will be done in one particular angle. And so, you know, that's just different. And I think that's just different ways of storytelling. It's like, you know, the goal is a very sort of, it's a piece of machinery, really. Yeah. It's like, and each scene is a cog, and you take one of those away and it doesn't quite work. And Prevenge was a bit more sort of fluid than that. And so the camera work then,
the edit of Prevenge moved around quite a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Whereas ours couldn't really. We found, we tried to sort of move it and bend it. And obviously it changes a lot, but the overall structure sort of couldn't change, because it's like Alice says, it's sort of just one of those films which sort of only really, I was about to say makes sense, I don't know whether it makes sense, but anyway, only works one way for some reason.
Okay. And the film is quite short compared to most feature films. I think it's about an hour and 20 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thereabouts. I mean, did you go in thinking, I need this film to be this length, or did it just kind of happen like that? Or is there a lot of stuff left on the cutting room floor, as it were?
There's very little left on the cutting room floor compared to a lot of films. We actually gave it to get some advice from an editor, and he said, show me the Rushes drive. Yeah. And he came back with a kind of slightly sort of fearful expression on his face, and he just said, yeah, you've used every bit of film, usable film, in this film, because it was, you know, a pretty constrained shoot all round. But what was the question again? I can't remember the question.
Did you get everything you wanted in the film, basically, and did you intend
The length of the film, one of the best things that happened to the film was, maybe people know that Ben Wheatley was the exec producer, and he was actually really had input in the edit, and he was very he's very ruthless in his own films, as an editor, edits his own films or co-edits his own films, and so he brought that kind of eye to it. And then his producer Andy Stark very early on said, you need to cut 20 pages from this script. And I was said, I can't possibly cut 20 pages from this script, and I went and tried it, and then went, yeah, what did I need those 20 pages for? Missed those. And that made it a leaner script, but it also made it a possible production. I think if I tried to film, we were going to do 90 pages in 8 days.
Wow.
We ended up doing 70 something pages in 10 days. And if it had been the first, I think it would have killed me.
It's a good exercise to do, isn't it, on a low budget film, on your first film, to like cut it down, because Prevenge was like 70 pages, something like that.
Right.
I was worried it wasn't going to be long enough, but actually if you film your kind of moody bits, which would be one line in a screenplay, like, you know, he explores the city, for example, in The Ghoul, that could be 2 minutes of footage. You don't know. And so a script isn't always a faithful representation of how long it's going to be anyway, and you do, it's about pacing, isn't it?
I think Eraserhead was 20 pages or something, going back to David Lynch, so, you know, there you go.
But
we had an amazing score as well. I mean you had an amazing score from Toy Drum, but we had a great score for The Ghoul from Wayne Shepherd, which just lifts the whole film and tells the story, and, you know, is sort of telling the subtext of the story all the time, and it's just a beautiful score. And it's kind of, you know, it's half the world of the film is in that music, musical score.
And you mentioned there, how many days did you shoot over?
So we shot all the dialogue in The Ghoul in 10 days, and then we went away and did assemblies and looked at it and went, oh God, and then figured out what we needed, yeah, and then went and did about 4 or 5 days of the rest of the film, okay, the sort of externals and things like the motorway that you see in the film, motorway sequence, did that. And we did things like, we got when people see the film, they see Tom's in a car on the motorway, but those, the interior of the car, whenever you see Tom, it's obviously a static car, right, and that was just done in a garage in Twickenham. And we had whenever you see car headlights behind Tom Meaton, that's just the producer Jack Gutman with 2 pound shop torches just stood behind the car, just kind of leaning from left to right, listing slowly. But you know, no one's found us out yet.
Alice, I imagine that's quite intense as an actor to do that kind of really short shoot.
I guess so, but I'm getting kind of used to it, to be honest. I mean, I guess I've worked on enough low budget things that it's feels normal to me.
You've done kids TV as well, haven't you? So
yeah,
a bit. So
yeah, that takes longer though than you'd think, actually. But doing stuff very quickly, I like. It's when it takes ages that I don't like. I think I would struggle more to work on a massive budget thing, right, because it's like then you're getting 30 seconds in the can every 2 days if you're lucky, something like that. You know, if you're working on some big CGI thing, and that, I think that's harder.
Yeah.
You know, okay, when you've got this momentum that you're just keeping performing and you're keeping going, that's fun. That's enjoyable. It's nice. It's adrenaline.
You sort of trust that, you know, you'll hit right notes and duff notes, but the great thing about film is you only use the good stuff, you know. So you just get that kind of rhythm of kind of, even though it's not a hugely improvisational film, The Ghoul, it's still the same sort of principle that you just go, look, all the cast had worked with one another and so knew each other's rhythms and are kind of providing energy for one another to feed off.
Great, excellent. Good afternoon, Alice Lowe. Thank you.
Thanks.
So thank you to Jack, Alice and Gareth for spending their time with us to talk about The Ghoul. We're really grateful. Coming up soon on the Curzon podcast, we've actually got a conversation with Walter Murch after his Q&A for The Conversation. Murch did the sound design on Francis Ford Coppola's film, and when we recently showed it at Curzon Soho, he gave up his time afterwards to talk to the audience about it. We've recorded that Q&A, and we'll be putting it out on this podcast as well. Along with that, we recently spoke to David Lowry, director of Pete's Dragon, Ain't Them Bodies Saints, one of this year's most unique films, A Ghost Story. And we spoke to him about that, which we'll be making available very soon. Thanks so much for joining us. See you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.